This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your own home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca, and on the TSN app. Brian Hayes, Yo Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, will join us in about 5 minutes. And Ray shot me a note over the weekend. I guess our boy Mark Masters is either writing an article or he's going to do some sort of an interview with a ref that is retiring. And he sent me the gist of it, basically. Longtime NHLer Scott Driscoll, who you guys would be familiar with.
Yeah,
Driscoll.
I know Scott. Yeah.
And Ferraro plays like a main role in this article because Ray, I guess, would just destroy refs. Nonstop. And some of the stuff he would say to refs, how he didn't get kicked out of almost every game is beyond me.
I never said anything to the ref. All I would say was if they wanted to act like a hero, because to me, if any linesman, they had that thing where if you get kicked out of the faceoff, if another guy gets kicked out, it's a penalty. Linesman should ever do that. That's a hero move. And I would give him the old classic line, no one's here to see you, bud. Just drop the effing puck, and that was it. But it would never be anything after that.
I used to watch Ray, and I used to laugh, because Ray always had the big mouth guard, right? So in order to chirp, he'd have to take his mouth guard out. And that was the line. The guy would kick him out. He'd take his mouth guard out. He'd say, look, there's 20,000 people here to watch you drop the puck. What a hero. You're a hero. He would just give it to him. I mean, Ray, obviously, you guys know, very quick-witted, very funny. But he used to just give it to a few of them. I don't want to name names. I'll name one name. I thought Kevin Collins was a bit of a hero. Kevin Collins is the linesman who jumped in and saved that fan in Philadelphia's life when Domi dragged him over the glass. Do you remember that? Where the guy fell over the glass and Domi tuned the guy up. Collins was in there in a second, which I get it, but I would have liked to see Domi tune the fan up a little bit more, personally, because I thought the guy was an idiot. But when you look at it, Kevin Collins was a guy who was, he was very by the book, put it that way.
The best linesman, Jamie, I thought the best linesman in the National Hockey League was Ray Scampagnello.
Scappy.
He was the best.
Yeah, there's some great ones, though. Even to this day, I travel with a lot of them because either they fly through Toronto or, kind of go through game to game, and I see them. There's some fantastic refs kind of cycling through. The head referee, Wes McCauley, he's a stud. Wes gets it. He's former player who he understands kind of the cadence of the game. Some of the new refs do. And the linesmen, man, they're good. They're really good at what they do. I know we get on them because, in real time, they're making, real tight decisions on the lines, offside and all that. But they're really good at what they do. But they take a lot of abuse. It used to be. I don't think they put up with it as much anymore because they don't have the relationships with the guys. Whereas back in the day, do you remember Paul Stewart? He's a former tough guy. Paul Stewart.
The only thing with Stewie is you could joke around and you could tell him to F off and he'd tell you back, and then you joke around and have a laugh. But then when the game got serious, you're like, okay, how serious are we going to take this?
Yeah, he...
I like Paul a lot.
Yeah, he would not cross a line, but he'd be one of those guys where, Kasparaitis was a hated guy on our team in New York. And Kasparaitis, somebody'd run him head first to the boards and he'd skate by and be like, get up! Get up, and you're faking it, and keep skating. But I kind of loved Stewie, but he was one of those old school. And I remember a buddy of mine who lived in Boston skated with, in the off season, Paul Stewart would come out and ref some of the pickup games. And he would chirp some of the guys to the point where he dropped the gloves with one of the guys in summer hockey.
Come on.
I could take, they fought. It's a pickup game, and he's reffing the pickup game, and he starts chirping with somebody, and the guy drops the gloves, and they fight.
Well, there's nothing. It's actually hysterical to watch grown men fight in beer league or pickup games. It's the dumbest thing ever, but it happens a lot.
Yeah.
It happens a lot. But the idea of an NHL ref trying to get in reps during the offseason to be prepared, and he's like, I've had enough. Like, that means he believes, and maybe he could, like you said, he was tough. He probably could have fought and taken on a bunch of guys during the NHL, like when he was actually calling NHL games. But I wouldn't be shocked if he was just, like, dying to get one in, like, throughout his career. Kasparaitis, let's say if that's who it is. Just dying to drop the gloves. I think we got Ray, don't we, here? Yeah, we got Ray. All right, joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's Ray Ferraro. Ray, we're just talking about that Masters piece on Scott Driscoll that you sent me over the weekend. And you just chirping him early into his career and him noticing it and talking about it with, like, his peers or his, you know, other guys that were on the tour with him. Take us through the story, because, I mean, you have firsthand knowledge of it. You are a primary character in this piece that Masters is doing.
Yeah, character, all right. What happened was, now, I don't know Scott Driscoll at this time from a hole in the wall, right? Like, he's just another guy doing a game, and I've never seen him before. So Pat Flatley apparently takes a penalty, and Driscoll, Scotty's the linesman, and he calls a 5-minute major on him. Turns out it's his first game in the league. So if you step back, just think of how nervous he must have been to make that call. Like, oh man, I hope I got this right. It's my first game. Now, somewhere in the game, I've noticed the other officials are calling him Cubby, because that's his nickname, Cub.
So let me guess, you changed that to Tubby pretty quickly.
Not Tubby. Chubby. So for the rest of the game, I'm like, hey, Chubby, just drop the puck in the circle, would you? Hey, Chubby, way to be a hero. Nice call, Chubby. And I'm giving it to him through the game. So the game ends, and the next week he's doing a game, and Owen Noodles, you'll remember Gord Brossaker, who was a long-time lineman. Yeah. Really, really
amazing
good lineman.
Hair. Yeah, oh, he had great hair.
Great flow. And he was one of those guys, like, Gordy was, like, he was in charge, right? Like, you knew he was in charge. So I guess before the game, he's asking Scott Driscoll, you know, how's it going? You're just getting started. He's like, yeah, things are going all right. He's like, you having any troubles? He's like, Ferraro was chirping me my first game the whole time, and he gives him the story, and he said, I'll fix that. So early in the game, there's an icing call, and, you know, one linesman gives it to the puck to the other guy, so Scotty Driscoll's giving the puck to Brossaker, and I'm standing there. So he stops him, and he said, I hear you're giving my friend a little trouble. And I'm like, what? And he's like, if you don't stop calling him Chubby, I'm going to let him body slam you over the glass. Scotty Driscoll's about 6'3", 240.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
He could pitch me out of the rink at any point. And I was like, all right. Well, this went on for... I would kind of needle him a little bit. He'd give it back to me. And this was, like, only because I grew to like him. But it all started because first game, I'm like, hey, Chubby, try and get the thing into the circle, would you? Try and keep up to the play. And even now, like, when I'm doing a game between the benches, I'll say to him, hey, man, you're really flying out there tonight. You're moving that 240 around pretty quick. And he's like, would you stop it? He's such a good guy. He was saying to me last year, just as a little tie-up to this, at the end of last year, he knew this year was going to be the end of his career. He was going to retire at the end of this year. And so he knew the number of periods left in his career. So he'd skate by and go, 196 periods, and then the next period, 195 periods. Like, he knew, I just found that so amusing that he knew exactly where. And now, with all that's gone on, his last game was supposed to be late March in Madison Square Garden. And, of course, that's looks like it's gone by the wayside.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. But the article you sent me with all the quotes and everything, there's some great, great lines in there. And just, I think it, like, the one line I sent back to you immediately, like,
yeah.
who was the ref that, I guess the guy you were just telling me about?
Well, no, there was two young officials that had just been told they weren't going to be in the playoffs.
Right.
This was when I was in Atlanta, and I didn't know that yet, but these guys had just been told your work during the regular season wasn't good enough. You're not going to go to the playoffs. So naturally, they were pretty down, and I guess they were having a bad night, and I was riding them like I used to do, and Driscoll grabs me and says, "Hey, could you just not be you tonight?"
Yeah, that's the best. Do me a favor, just like not be yourself for the rest of the night.
I was like, oh, so he told me the story. I was like, okay, I get it. Yeah, I'll zip it. But yeah. I had running conversations with these guys all the time, and I wish I would have kept my mouth shut a lot of the times. Like some of the guys I battled with my whole career, Paul Stewart, start to finish.
Yeah, we just mentioned.
Yeah, before you came on, I was telling a story where Stewie would just yell at players. Like, you know, Casper Ice would get hit head first through the boards and be like, get up, you're faking it, and screaming at him. The guy was a lunatic.
Well, we got into it, I forget where, but he used to say in a scrum, he'd say, yeah, when I played, we'd just drop the gloves and go. Like, you're the ref. Like, you don't say that garbage. So, anyway, I happened to look up because I knew he had played a game in the Boston Garden, and he fought O'Reilly, Wensink, and Jonathan.
Wow. Like, all in the same night?
How bloody tough do you have to be to even think of that? And so I said to him during this scrum, I said, yeah, I looked up your thing about that game in Boston, you got the crap kicked out of you three times. Man, he was not happy. So now we were barking the whole time, and I'd say to him, oh, here we are again, Stewie. 18,000 people came to watch you ref a game. Isn't that amazing? And so he gave it to me just as I was giving it to him, too. It was quite entertaining, but he was heated, man. He was an intense guy.
Right. Well, what I appreciate about those stories is none of that would have been picked up by the media, by the fans. Like, you would see it. You'd witness, they're talking back and forth, but you wouldn't really know.
No. Nowadays, everyone's somebody mic'd. Would have a camera with sound on it, and it all get picked up, and it's
you can't
like,
do
look
it.
At this nonsense.
I don't know if Ray would remember this, but Stewie reffed one of the worst games I've ever seen in my life. I was in net. And he didn't call
his worst game.
No. He didn't call a penalty the whole game. And then he called one on Washington in overtime. Ray, I think you scored on the power play. Like it was, and guys were like hooking and slashing and hitting from behind, and it was a gong show. He didn't make a call the whole game. And then he made one call in overtime, like a cheap, like tripping penalty or something, and was smiling on the way to the penalty box. And I don't know who was coaching Washington, but they lost their mind, and we scored in overtime. I'll never forget it to this day. Like, it was one of the worst games I've ever seen reffed.
The guys that reffed in the single ref days, like, their personality was, they were all like Wes McCauley.
Yeah,
you know, like how Wes has a personality. You know Wes. You know what he does. But most of the guys, they're just a ref because they want them to be somewhat anonymous. The league, that is. When they were back in the day, like, they all were like, you know, none of them had a helmet. They were all strutting around out there. They were the boss. They controlled the way the game went. They didn't have a partner. It was them. And so it's set up for conflict pretty easy. I was watching a game yesterday, and I don't know what the hell was going on, but Gretz was yelling at the referee. He had just gotten an assist on a Paul Coffey goal, and he was giving it to the ref, and they were speculating that he wanted the puck because that gave him a points or an assist record or something, but nobody knew. And I'm like, he was losing his mind. It had to be something more than that, other than I had an assist on the first goal too, right?
Well,
who knew?
Exactly.
Like, it was all like the Wild West a little bit. It was kind of it. The other thing is, no player would have gone into the media or complained to a supervisor that the ref swore at him.
No.
That would have never happened.
No.
That would have never happened.
Just accepted. You're both going to do it, and you're both going to yell at each other, and after the game, we'll move on. Right?
Yeah. Like or you never talk to the guy again. Mm-hmm. Like you just say, you'd kind of build this truce of, I'm not going to yell at you. You don't yell at me anymore. That's it. And you just go on because they were the ref and you were the player.
Well, you've jogged my memory here now that we're on the topic, just about being in the rink and not knowing what's happening on the ice and how technology has changed so much, where now everything's reviewed and replayed within the arena. where, you know, back in the old barn, if you went down to the gardens and something happened on the ice and you saw Gilmore freaking and then you saw Burns and then, you know, Ferraro on the other team was yelling, you'd have to get home and, like, read the paper the next day to find out.
Right.
You know, like, you're in the building, you're like, I don't know what the problem is. I don't know what they're saying. I don't know what they're doing. You're asking people around you. Now you're like, oh, I'll just sit back. In 2 minutes, they'll replay it, or I'll look on my phone and I'll find out because someone will tweet what's happening. Right?
Do you remember, like, when the video boards started to come in, and they were just like I don't know, like little Lego features, basically. They were, you know, there was no video on them yet. And I remember the one always in Winnipeg. The Jets would come out and they'd have the sound of the jet, and the word Jets would come across the board, and we were all like, wow, that's pretty cool. Like, that's what they had. That was the animation of the day. If you wanted to see something up on the board, you were looking in the wrong place.
Right.
There's nothing going to be there.
Nothing. Like, if you missed a cheap shot behind the play, if you didn't see it in the stands, you didn't know what happened. You had no idea. There's nothing. You were just there. You're like, oh, there's a brawl now, but I don't know why. But there's a brawl. So something happened. This is fun. I'm not saying it wouldn't be entertaining, but
it was.
Did you guys chirp refs?
I did, but not to the – I didn't have much to chirp about. I always had a pretty good rapport, Ray, with the linesmen. You know, Pat DiPuzzo and guys like that. The only guy I didn't love was Kevin Collins. Like, to me, Kevin Collins was too much – he was too straight and narrow. We'll call it that, because I just...
When you guys have Gord Miller on, I'm not going to tell the story. When you have Gord Miller on, tell him about Kevin. Ask him to tell a story about me and Kevin Collins. I'll let him tell it.
I never said anything, Ray, because I had enough problems worrying about myself and my game, and I knew I got in trouble one night because a linesman kicked me out of a face-off dot in Montreal, and I said, oh, why is that? Because you're French-speaking, and I'm not, and I get to kick. He's like, don't ever, he pulled me aside. He goes, you say that one more time. He goes, you're getting a gross misconduct and blah, blah, blah. So I never said another word to a linesman ever.
Yeah, I know lots of guys who would lose it on them, but, you know, Ray, you make a great point. Like, back then, those guys had their own personality, and you could kind of, you know, see how the game was going to go based on what they were doing. Like, nowadays, it's pretty robotic out there, and, you know, the game is so fast, it's so much different, and to Brian's point, there's microphones everywhere, so guys aren't saying much, where you could have a spirited debate with a ref or a linesman. And I always liked the veteran guys who would come over to the bench and say, you know what, I missed that call, I screwed up. You know what I mean? Like, that to me, that was the confidence of guys like Brad Watson and Meyer and those guys who like had the confidence to know, like, hey, I missed the call. Like, I'll make up for it, but I need to be better on that.
I remember one time a coach sent me across to complain about a call that Dan Marowelli was doing the game. And so he says, go over it, find out what's going on. That was a garbage call. And I got about three quarters of the way across the ice, and Dan yelled to me, as I was coming, he was, I didn't effing see it. And so now I'm like, well, now how am I going to argue this? Right? He just said, I didn't see it.
Right.
So I went over there and I said, I'm going to argue this with you. And I just kind of pointed my glove at him a few times and had nothing to say. And he's like, all right, now beat it, scram. And then I went back and I said to the coach, like, he didn't see it. He didn't know what was going on. He was making it up. And the coach kind of, you know, what are you going to say? My point being, he told me on the way, there is no argument. I didn't see it. I'm the only guy out here. And you understood that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was confident enough to do it. I thought it was pretty awesome, because there's other times, you know, the guy didn't see it and you'd be just going at it with him. And, you know, me, because I had a lot to say, I'd be going at it and he'd be telling me to screw off and I'd be telling him he sucked. And then every once in a while, they go, yeah, you haven't scored in 12 games. And you'd be like, now what?
Yeah, pretty good mic drop.
Now they're doing research on you, though. That's the thing. Like,
you've made your mark when that's happening. Well, and that's another example of how technology has infiltrated the game, where now the refs can be like, hey, I'm waiting for the review to come in. Like, it's not about me not seeing it. I know I didn't see it, but maybe we can rectify it, because I'm going to go check it because there's review or there's a challenge or whatever. And that's another thing that would happen. I'm sure you guys experienced it a lot on the bench with coaches, and this would happen at every level. even if the coach didn't see it. You know, if the crowd reacts, they start yelling at the ref. Like, didn't even see a trip.
Well, how even today with all, like, how many times do you hear a crowd go crazy about a penalty, and then you see the arms ref go, or the ref's
yeah.
arm go up?
Yeah.
They still do it. Like, it's a reactional call.
Well, and I wanted to bring this up because I read this just before we came on, and this is what I appreciate about the NFL. They have a long history of they'll implement a rule. If they don't like it after a year, they'll get rid of it. Now, some might argue you should put some sort of stipulation in there, give it 3 years or five before you can make an adjustment. But they implemented this past year the pass interference review, where you can challenge a pass interference, and reports came out today they're already getting rid of it. They didn't like it. It didn't work. They said, forget it. We gave it a shot. We're gone. And I appreciate that. It's their league. This isn't a constitution. The founding fathers didn't put it in place. It's their league, their rule book. They tried something. They didn't like it. So they moved on. Where in the NHL, when was the last time that happened? They implemented a rule, and they're like, you know what? We got this one wrong. Our bad. We'll try something different. We're pulling it for next
year.
Well,
it took them 5 years, sir. I don't know. Has it been longer than 5 years, the offside stuff has come in?
Yeah, and they just adjusted it. They didn't get rid of it, right? They're
right,
still,
but it
they're
took
still
till
reviewing
now.
It.
I mean,
yeah.
it's been a tornado of negative stuff since it came in, when the review started, and then I don't think anybody really understood you could review a play after a minute if they were in the zone. I remember the first game I did, somebody scored, and then the producer said in my ear, they're going to review it. And I was like, for what? Mm-hmm. And they said, the entry. I'm like, that was a minute ago. Like, and it took them a couple of years to, now we've got the foot in the air. I think whenever we get back, they're going to go with that. But it certainly, they could have made a change and adjustment within a year, but they didn't. And you're right, the NFL, I remember they had the horse collar tackle. Somebody got hurt a couple of times in 3 weeks, and they put it in like week four. They said, you can't tackle like that anymore.
Right.
And I was like, I wish that was the one for me, Brian. Guys that, like, I was like, wow, those guys are super proactive. They're like, that's it. This can't happen anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, we saw something. Like, we this is how we envisioned it, but it turns out that's not how it actually happened. You know, because making a decision when you're in shorts and a T-shirt during the off season is one thing, and it seems ideal. Maybe not everyone's on the same page. It may not be unanimous, but you get enough votes to put it in the rule book, and then you see it. Because it's the same thing. Like, I take issue with goaltender interference being reviewed. I don't like the offside review because I think it's pointless. It's a waste of time. That's not the focus of the rink. You know, you're focusing on the net. You're not focused on the blue line. And yeah, there's some egregious examples, but most of them are by like a quarter inch. They have no bearing on what's going to happen the rest of the play. But goaltender interference is probably the closest thing to reviewing pass interference, and it's the same thing. They were like, far too often we challenge it, we think we were right, and then we get it wrong, and we're like, what's the point of having this? If we're just going to continue to be right or wrong 50% of the time, why waste the time with a challenge? Because you're still going to piss off half the people, and right. half the well, time you're going to think that it's an obvious answer, and it turns out it's not, so what are we doing here?
It looks like, for the goalie interference, of course, which we know best, it's like, half the time, it literally becomes guesswork.
Yeah.
Well, it's still opinionated.
I'm sure Noodles does the same thing, and I'm watching the review, and you're trying to talk and make sense because you're on TV, and that's what you're supposed to do. And in your head, you're going, I don't know. Looks like it could be, but I don't know. Maybe
well,
not. I don't know.
The biggest thing I always found, Ray, is I'll have my opinion, and I want to say it, but I can't trust that the war room and everyone else is going to have the same opinion as me. So you don't want to look like an idiot and be like, that's a goal 100%. And then it gets called back, and you're like, in your mind, you're going, what the hell did I just say? So you try and buy yourself some time to look at multiple angles and go, okay, I think this. And a lot of times I'll say, if I was making the call, this is what I would do. You know, Gord or Chris will be like, what do you think? And I'll say, I think it's no goal. And then if it's a goal, you're like, no, I guess that's what Toronto thought of this. You know,
it shows you what I know.
But that's what it is. It's subject to opinion where it's not cut and dry. Over the glass is cut and dry.
That's why I'm against it, because it's still, like, it doesn't matter if you see it live or you see it later. It's still coming down to an interpretation of one person. They're going to look at it and make the call. So we're still going to come back to a judgment call. Yes, there will be the occasional example where it's egregious and you're like, how did they miss that? Like, obviously, that's going to be overturned. But 90% of the time, you're like, I think, but maybe not. And you're like, what are we doing here? What's the point of this? Like, you're going to piss off half the people, and half the time you think they got it right, half the time they get it wrong, which is probably about the same percentage if they just leave it the way it is live. You call it live. If you get it right, you get it right. If you get it wrong, you get it wrong. But at least we're not wasting 10 minutes because we're going to have the same reaction after you've seen it reviewed from 15 different angles. Right. So I just appreciate that the NFL is like, we tried it. It sucked. It pissed everyone off, so we got rid of it. And if the NHL, I think, had any brains when it comes to this, you know, they get a lot of other things right. But this one, the goaltender interference, I just throw it out. Be like, call it live. If you miss it, so be it. We survived for 100 years.
You know what, Brian? I still think the best way is just go to what they do in the international hockey. For the first 2 weeks, it would be a bucket of crap. But after that, it just clears itself out. If you go, you can skate through the blue paint. You can, you know, you can fish for rebounds when the puck's in there. If you plant your feet and it's in the blue paint, they blow the whistle immediately. Before anything's happened and the faceoff goes outside. It's amazing how the players all of a sudden realize the blue means stay out of the goalie's hair. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, it happens every tournament. The first three or four games, there's North American guys in the crease all over the place. And then after that, it's gone. It becomes almost a non-factor. There's no goalie interference. We're doing 30 games over there. We might get two reviews.
Right.
I really think it takes it, because it takes what you hate, Brian, which is the interpretation. Mm-hmm. It takes that away. It's like, the guy stopped. He's got a foot in the crease. They just blow the whistle. Even if the puck's at the point.
Yeah.
Because the next time, the guy won't stand there.
Yep. Yeah, and then it's on the league now. The NHL has a long history of doing that, and then about 10 games in, they're like, nah, just let that one go.
Right. That one go, yeah. You can't let it go.
No, you can't. If you're going to commit to it, you've got to commit to it. But anyway, at this point, I mean, we're not expecting anything to change between now and when they return to play. But
nope.
Hopefully that happens sooner than later. All right, buddy. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5:05.
Awesome. Take care, boys. Be well.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline, reminding everyone that we all bleed the maple leaf. It's the strength and compassion we share as a community that has and will get us through anything. MapleToyota.com. Nazem Kadri in about a half an hour. Marcellus Wiley in about an hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Nazem Kadri will join us in about a half an hour. We've got four more battles in the Overdrive Madness bracket, the round of 32. And the four today are all-time battles.
All-timers.
Yeah, like there are going to be four clips that go home that, quite frankly, don't deserve to go home. But this is the job that we've chosen. I mean, someone's got to step up to the plate here and make a decision. And we urge people to vote online on Twitter at Overdrive1050 and on Instagram at TSN1050. We'll play two of the clips later this hour, courtesy of the Constipator Region, and two clips in the next hour, courtesy of Al's Brothers Farmer. And I don't know if you saw Al's brother tweeting about WrestleMania all weekend.
Like, he was into it.
Al's brother was so jacked up for WrestleMania. And I know, I'm assuming Mullen probably ordered it and watched it. I know Mullen's a big wrestling guy, and I think the Grappler might be into it.
Yeah, any of those millennials are. Most of them are.
Like, yeah. You know. I don't even know if it's a demographic. Like, wrestling's massive, man. They do massive numbers, and WrestleMania is huge. And if there was ever a year I would get it, I guess it would have been this weekend. It's not my thing. I don't know who's big. I don't know who's in it. But I can't imagine watching WrestleMania without fans. Like, I know we might get there with sports. I understand that. And it's going to be strange. It's going to be different. We were talking about reffing in the previous segment, how they can still be manipulated by the crowd. That won't be happening if there's no crowd. But wrestling without fans, walking down to the ring with no one around.
Well, I mean, I don't know if Mulls or Al's...
chime in, Mulls.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, wait, I guarantee you he was in his living room, like, doing
face
the moves,
paint on.
Screaming. Yeah,
I was
screaming.
Watching it. That's correct. My daughter was watching it with me as well.
Okay.
And thoughts?
Well, I mean, with no crowd, it honestly, it was awkward because you're used to hearing it and you're hearing them talk to each other, and it's. I actually watched a lot of it on mute because it was just too awkward.
Really?
Yeah, see, I can see that. Yeah.
See, that's tough. The microphones would pick up because these guys, you know, they coordinate some of the things. Like, so
is that what you're saying, Mullen? Like, you heard some guys say...
Yeah, like, so like when they wrestle, it's no secret. They call a match to each other. They say what's next. But, like, they would chirp each other, but they had to, like, overdo it because it's just dead air. Like, there's play-by-play, but when the play-by-play stops, all of a sudden you just hear a slam, and then it's dead air.
Yeah, that is so weird.
It's awkward, which made me think, like, if we get back to playing games and there's no crowd, is that going to be awkward, too?
Yeah, it'll be different.
Don't you think that if they produce it properly, would you have, like, a crowd track in the background?
You would hope so, but I don't know. It was just weird, man. Like, you need to pump some noise.
Yeah, I think they will in sports. I would expect they would. I think the players would want it. I would think the wrestlers would have wanted that. Like I'm surprised they didn't think of that. Have some sort of surround sound, like just even a humming noise or something, plant.
It's awkward, especially when they make their entrances and they're like pretending like there's a crowd there.
Right. Like, that's what I'm saying.
There's like nobody there, man.
Like, did the Undertaker come in full garb and like the whole...
No, so with the Undertaker's match, it was like a whole cinematic thing. They like pre-taped it. It was offset. Like,
oh, really? Oh, that's kind of cool.
So it was those ones were actually pretty cool because
cool.
I'm not even going to waste my time explaining it to him.
No, it's a tough sell.
Yeah, but you know that Al's brother had like a luchador mask in the attic and was watching it.
Yeah,
for sure.
He was dressed like basically remember the Demolition back in the day, the tag team. He had a mask on, face paint, everything,
and a unitard.
Yeah, Al's brother was into it. He was jacked. He was firing away tweet after tweet, and I saw a couple of like clips that popped up online about how weird it looked without a crowd. But I guess that's the precursor. Like, UFC 249 is happening next Saturday, and that's real stuff, man. Like, these guys are brawling. Like, it's not, they're not calling out, "Hey, I'm going to hit you with a right hook here and put you in a rear naked choke." It's the real stuff, and the belt's on the line, and money's on the line, but it's going to be strange. It's going to be really strange without a crowd, but it's the reality that we're dealing with at this point, and and when the other leagues show up, we're all working under the assumption it'll begin without any fans in the seats.
I mean, obviously, we'd all watch an NHL game, fans or no fans, but... The ambiance is just so different. Like, think of it. Like, I mean, you played in the NHL all your career, but could you imagine playing in a building that had nothing?
The biggest game. I found it weird enough in preseason when the boards were white. The advertisements weren't even on the boards. I was like, man, this is weird. It felt like empty with fans in it, but just the boards were white. I can't imagine with nobody in the building. And we keep saying, guys... And I know we have to be optimistic, but the one of the major factors in this is the players. So the players are going to be like, oh, what? I know they want to perform or whatever, but they're going to say, so everyone's got to stay home and they can maybe watch this on TV, but we're going to be out playing against other teams and sweating. And that's the major factor here. They're going to be like, oh, okay, everything is going to shut down, but we're going to continue to play games and be out there. Like, that's the one thing I don't get.
Yeah, but I think... They're expecting that other parts of the economy will be opened up at that point, too.
I know that, Brian, but does Austin Matthews know that Patrick Kane's self-isolating and not going out?
No, of course not.
He doesn't know that.
Yeah, unless there's testing. I mean, that's the big thing is testing. If there's an overabundance of testing, and in 3 months it's almost available to everyone, which at this point seems far-fetched, but again, when
there's going to be a corona test when you walk into the rink? It's like someone's going to zap your forehead and say, okay, go ahead?
Basically, that's I'm not joking. Like, I actually literally believe that is a one thing they're hoping for is, you know, they're playing in Alaska, and before you even get off the plane, you're taking a test, and it's like, all right, you're negative, you're good, go ahead. You're negative, you're good. And you're just going to all be in the exact same spot. No one is allowed around the players that hasn't been tested themselves, and they're just going to go out there and play. But it seems like draconian. It seems crazy. It's like the Walking Dead. But that might be the reality in 3 months.
It could be, but the weirdest part, let's just for hypothetical, it's Boston, Toronto, and they're about to play, and you know what? Pasternak's not available tonight. He's got coronavirus.
Well, like, then they might shut it down. I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, is he pulled or is the whole team pulled? Like, that's the type of stuff that we start to get into. And I know it's hypothetical and it seems like it's a ways down the road. But if that's what you're talking about, like, that's why, you know, it's easier for a boxing match. You're testing two guys, you know, for UFC, you're testing, you know, multiple guys. If you've got 5 or 6 fights that night,
right,
you're really testing 10, 12 people. You know, a hockey team, you got 20 players playing each night plus 3 extras. Like, you're looking at 46 guys that you got to run through testing that night. And let's not forget, if a trainer tests positive, you know, somebody...
Well, obviously, it's not only going to apply to them, and that's what I'm saying. Obviously, right now, this is why these conversations are hard to have, because everything seems impossible and far-fetched. But, you know, if we're dealing with factories, manufacturers, entrepreneurs, in 3 months, if they have developed a test that is, you know, viable and available and everyone can get it, you can get it at Shoppers Drug Mart, then obviously the players would have access to it, and the trainers would too. Right now, that's not possible because the testing is for the frontliners, and no one's suggesting that it should be possible.
Right.
But what I'm like, we were all texting over the weekend about Bill Gates and what he's doing right now, you know, with taking multiple vaccines and building multiple factories and basically producing vaccines that, if and when they get passed, they'll be available to hopefully millions and millions of people, if not more than that, around the world. That's what I'm saying is, again, I don't know this right now, but I wouldn't be shocked if there was a company somewhere in the States, somewhere in the world, that was working on a rapid test that can be manufactured quickly and in bulk, and that's what we're dealing with in 3 months, 4 months. And I hope that's what comes out of this is, as a, you know, society worldwide, we're much more prepared for the next wave of pandemic, because something else will happen. 15 years, 20 years, I don't know when.
Right.
But, you know, okay, let's work on testing, because clearly we've been lacking that. You know, and it's not just the States. We can sit there and say, oh, the States. It's not like Canada's been leading the charge here. You know, we're behind too. Everyone's behind. Everyone's caught off guard.
Yeah, everyone's got to own this. You know, it's easy to point fingers at this and this and this, but
ultimately
we're all in this together and trying to learn as we go along. So, you know, everything that we're suggesting and everything that's been put out there, there's no manual for this. So people are trying. There's a lot of smart people trying to think on the fly here and adjust. So some of it seems crazy. Some of it seems insensitive because, you know, people say, how can you think of sports at a time like this when New York State is backed up and they're talking about, you know, bringing in or digging mass graves and all of these things? Like, I get that, and we have to be sensitive towards that, but you also have to think, you know, maybe some people need an escape. I need an escape. Our 4 o'clock hour, I needed that laugh. Like, taking a deuce in the woods.
Here's an example. Like, this is where it gets selective. Like, why is no one's yelling about WrestleMania? I haven't seen anyone yelling about that being on last night. Were the wrestlers tested beforehand? Of course not.
Were they? I would imagine.
I doubt
they
it.
Were.
Well,
no?
How do you get? Why would a wrestler get it before someone on the front line in New York? Like, why would, like, I don't, I, that's what I'm saying. Like, we're being selective here. So you're telling me in 3 months, if the NHL plays, people are going to be furious and snap on them, but WrestleMania, UFC, other events are happening, and it's like, oh, well, it's an escape. You know, and ultimately, yes, it's going to be on the athletes. The athletes, they have to play their part in this, and I don't know how they're going to react. I don't know where we're going to be in 3 months.
I would hope. Now, I get it. Like, I don't know. I'm sure they're short on a lot of things. But my understanding, I would hope that WrestleMania, those guys would have been tested. Because
I don't know if they were, though. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, but I haven't heard that. Like, does Vince McMahon have access to testing?
I mean, does he? I know people don't like to hear it, but, I mean, it's probably a wealthy organization that probably kind of back-channeled their way into something, I would think.
I don't know.
But for peace of mind, I'm hoping they did. Like, just knowing that, you know, that those guys could have put themselves at risk out there, I would hope that at least the guys that were wrestling were
tested. But at the same time, they made the decision. They're grown, they're adults. I'm not saying I would do it or I would suggest anyone should, but if they made the call, and the same thing applies with athletes. Maybe in 3 months, players are like, you know what, we feel like we should do this. Right. And you're going to take every safety precaution possible, but, you know, it's not going to be completely eradicated from society in 3 months. Like,
no.
Someone tweeting in right now, like, you can't play sports until it's 100% gone. That's not happening. Like, this is going to be around for a long, long time. It's just a matter of peaks and valleys and people becoming immune to it and testing and vaccines. There's all these different timelines that are working here or in play here. But at some point, players are probably going to be presented with an idea from a league saying, we want to do this. You know, it's not 100% foolproof, but are you in? And I guess it'll be on the players to say they're either in or they're out.
That's right.
Nazem Kadri in 20 minutes. Marcellus Wiley at 6:25. We'll play the first two battles of the Madness Overdrive bracket. We'll get to that next.
I'm having a good time. Not.
Glory, glory, yeah!
The Overdrive Madness bracket.
This guy's such an idiot here.
All right, the bracket brought to you by Maple Toyota, reminding everyone to follow the advice of healthcare experts, exercise social distancing, wash your hands frequently, and keep the vulnerable in mind. MapleToyota.com. So again, we're into the round of 32, and there are some heavyweight contenders that have been rolled out this afternoon. And you can vote on Twitter, vote on Instagram. We're actually going to start with Al's Brothers Farmers Region, because we were just talking about Al's brother and him being a big wrestling fan, and he was tweeting about it over the weekend. And we figured, you know what? Yeah, we'll start in his region. So we have the number 2 seed in the Al's Brothers Farmer Region, which, again, as I said last week, this is my favorite clip of all time. For me, this is definitely in the Final Four, but it's got a battle on its hands this afternoon in the round of 32. So let's begin with the 2 seed in Al's Brothers Farmers Region.
At Chevrolet, we have... We have also been proud of the latest and greatest technology in our truck lineup, which is the all-new 2015 Chevy Colorado. It combines class-winning and leading, technology and stuff.
The visual brings it home, too. You got Bumgarner.
He never gets old.
Oh. He's just sweating up a storm.
Aaron Andrews is staring at him with a face on. That is very unprofessional, but I don't blame her. She's like, is this guy for real? Like, Chevy sent Rick Wilde down to the World Series?
Awesome. This is the guy you had to send me?
Yeah, technology and stuff. So Rick Wilde is going up against this legend.
This guy's such an idiot here.
Phil Wilde and Rick
Kessel. I think Phil goes down.
I think he better. As much as I love that clip, Chevy guy's the greatest clip going, and I will be thoroughly disappointed.
Chevy guy is Final Four material.
It should be.
Yeah, I think it is.
I think it is as well. So that's one battle. This is the second battle du jour, beginning with this gem.
We want to get Brent's feedback. He covers the Senators on a regular day on the Curtis Lazar trade to Calgary. Brent.
Is there ketchup on that?
Yes, James.
So there you go.
That's a stupid clip. It shouldn't even have gotten this far.
That may go the distance. No. I really think it will.
No, I'll make it not go the distance.
It's
I'll
got a real chance. But we made a drastic mistake, an embarrassing mistake, not knowing the results of our own bracket last week, because we had strapped on RIP to the Lindy Ruff cough clip.
Yeah.
Turns out it did win last week.
Of course. Wow. Very sad.
Yeah, that was my bad. I was convinced I saw it online that it did not move on. It did. So you've got the O-Dog up against Lindy Ruff.
and then was able to push through and then provide some offense for us.
You all right there, Lindy?
Yeah, I'm all right, sorry.
There you go. Yeah. There it is. That's all amazing. Up against
such
Lindy.
Such a cartoon cough. Like it's yep. so. It's like a the cartoons where the wagon back in the day just blows up.
Isolated. It is a thing of beauty. Yep. Like that is a deep, deep cough. So there you go. You can vote on those two battles. We've got two more courtesy of the Constipator Region. We'll get to that in about an hour. Nazem Kadri coming up. Marcellus Wiley coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.
This hour has been brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.